Hi, my name's Tom, and I'm a sex and porn addict.
Hi, Tom.
And I want to start by thanking Matt for asking me to share tonight. I'm going to give a little discussion about what it was like, and then what happened, and then what it's like today. So I'll start out by giving some of my background. I am a 55-year-old male. I've been in recovery for, because this is going to be podcast, so just for the studio audience, just so they know that I'm a male. I've been in recovery for about, in a few months, it'll be 18 years. I've been in this fellowship or a variation of this fellowship for almost all of that 18 years. I have had a problem with sexual obsession and sexual acting out since at least the seventh grade. I have clear memories from the seventh grade of just being obsessed with women, including like adult women. You know, I mean, I'm like barely hitting puberty and I'm like seriously focused on my 40-year-old social studies teacher. Something's not right about that, I think. She was a very attractive social studies teacher, by the way. And then I just went on with my life, and things happened, things developed. I got married at a very young age. My first marriage was just a disaster. I was never really fully present in that marriage, and I will get to what it's like now. But of all the things that I would never, all the sort of areas or characteristics, the one that I would absolutely not want to go back to, the one that is, now that I see the other side of it, it's like, wow, that's what it's like, is being present. Actually being present in my body, present in my life, present with, you know, fellows, present with my wife. We were out somewhere in public the other day, and I could hear sounds that, like, in the past would have really distracted me, like the sound of, you know, women's shoes on the floor, or the sound of, you know, the voices of women, you know, in the area, or like maybe even like a comment that seemed a little off color or provocative coming from a woman in our area. And we were at a restaurant or something, and I stayed 100% focused on my wife and that conversation. And that is an unmitigated miracle for me. So my first marriage, I really was not there. I mean, I wasn't there for my life. I'm a professional. I have a professional degree. I have no idea how I obtained that degree, given how compromised I was. But although I did very well in school, when I got out into the real world, I mean, maybe that's the distinction for me. I can thrive in a fantasy world, and school is kind of like a fantasy world. So I excelled because there were very clear sort of boundaries. What was expected of me was very, you know, scripted. You know, do this, study, read, you know, write it back in a test. I could do all of that. I have excelled in recovery, I think, in part because it's all so clearly mapped out. And by the way, you know, our program of recovery is based on the traditions and steps and literature of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, we rely heavily on that literature. But, you know, mainly we just take alcohol and as a concept and substitute sexual acting out, and you know, it's no masturbation, no sex outside a committed relationship, and no viewing of pornography. And the pornography part is huge for me. I haven't looked at pornography in over 4 years, so I'm going to go back just for a few more minutes to talk about what it was like. I had no emotional sobriety pre-recovery. I had a really bad temper, and sometimes when people hear that I have a bad temper, they're surprised, and I really go out of my way to try to fool people into thinking that I'm a really nice guy. I try to like talk like in a sort of soft, gentle way, and I try to be attentive, and you know, I don't want them to think that I'm like rough or gruff. But I'm really, the honest truth is I'm like a sadistic SOB, and I have a really bad anger problem. And the people who get the brunt of it mainly are family members, because if I were to treat friends that way, nobody's going to tolerate that, the way I act towards my first marriage. I don't know why my first wife stuck around as long as she did. I mean, I made her life just miserable. And then when she finally said the marriage was over, I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. I thought the nerve of this person. But I mean, like, gosh, the verbal and emotional abuse and physical abuse as well. I had no control over my emotional life. My emotions were in total control of me. And my number one strategy for sort of dealing with emotions was acting out. And acting out meant, you know, this was back I guess it would be the 90s. Is that right? Yeah, the 90s. For those of you out there in podcast land, I will tell you that once you get over 50, the decades start to blur together just a little bit. So it was the 90s, not the 80s, certainly not the 70s, but in any case, it was the 90s. The internet was not really going strong. I mean, I sponsor people who have only ever known the internet. You know, I mean, it used to be if you wanted to look at pornography, you had to sort of suffer through the humiliation of going to like a magazine stand, which they still have magazine stands, and I assume there's still pornography in them. But I don't know how the paper pornographers make money. But in any case, back then that was the only game in town, and I would go into the magazine stands, and literally I would tell myself before I would go in, because I had a lot to do, you know, because I never worked, so all the work that I got just piled up. I just never did any of it. All of my work was spent pushing off the work to another day, and it takes a lot of work to push work off. And so I always had a lot of work backed up, and I would say to myself, I'm going to go into this newsstand here, and I'll spend, you know, 5 minutes, maybe five to eight minutes. And like 4 or 5 hours later, it would start getting dark outside. And I can never understand why any of the guys who like run those things ever said, "Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to leave," because you're just like, you're scaring the customers, for one thing. And you've been here for like 5 hours, in case you haven't noticed. And you haven't bought anything, yes. So please, sir, buy something or get the heck out of here. They never said anything. And I looked at every single page of every single pornographic magazine in the store. And when I was in that mode, my thought was that, you know, I mean, you know, some people collect stamps, you know, everybody has a hobby. My hobby was sort of evaluating and categorizing pornography, you know. And you know, if you're going to be like a porn critic, I mean, I assumed movie critics had to go to the bad movies so they would know what a bad movie is. I had to look at all the pornography, you know, so I would be able to say, you know, that was okay. That was not so great. This was really good. I never told anyone about my ideas about, you know, I mean, I didn't have like a blog or anything, or, you know, a magazine. Like, if you can imagine the magazine rating pornography, like a Rotten Tomatoes for porn magazines. But in any case, it was just like my life was sort of living in my head. My emotions were completely out of control. I could barely work. My car would steer itself. It would steer itself to magazine stands. It would steer itself to strip clubs. You know, any place other than work. I mean, I could not force my car to actually go to where I was supposed to go to work. It would just went other places on its own. And then eventually my first wife said that she was leaving me. And I was devastated, but it turns out to have been the best thing that ever happened to me. That was in 1998, and that's when my recovery adventure started. So I will say that I have not masturbated for over 12 years, and I've been married for over 12 years to my current wife, who's just in the other room here at the Essanon meeting. And I have a marriage that really is amazing. I mean, it's miraculous. What happened was, the most important thing that happened was I stopped. I stopped doing everything. I first got into recovery, sexual recovery, I think it was May of 1998. And, you know, I actually stopped masturbating, which I at the time I did not think was possible. It had never occurred to me not to masturbate. I just assumed there was some medical reason why it was absolutely essential that I masturbate 3 or 4 times a day. You know, the idea of not, I could see cutting back, but not doing it seemed insane to me. But I did go along because I was desperate. And I remember that first physical recovery that I had, it was the most peaceful, most sort of satisfying, serene time ever in my life up to that point. I mean, I think I was fairly depressed at the time as well, which made it a little bit easier to abstain from masturbation. I was not looking at pornography, and I was not in a relationship. I had a marriage, but I had moved out, and my wife was very hard to deal with. So then I met the woman who I eventually married. I've had a special request to slide in a story here about that transitional phase when I was still living up north after I had met my wife. One evening, I was actually talking on the phone to my current wife while I was, quote-unquote, babysitting my kids at an apartment in Davis. And my first wife came in. She figured out that I was talking to the new girlfriend on her phone. She was very upset. You know, she demanded that I leave the apartment immediately. I went over to say goodbye to my daughter, who I think at the time she might have been 4 or something, and I could tell she was scared because of the yelling that my first wife was doing. And I just went to go hug her, and I wasn't being aggressive or obstinate. I just wanted to hug her goodbye, and as I was walking to her, my wife literally jumps in front of me. I mean, sort of like if you can imagine, like a superhero kind of coming down from the air and like just blocking me. And I felt so disrespected. The disrespect has always been a huge trigger for me. So I pushed her. I pushed her out of the way and then hugged my daughter and left. Well, as soon as I left, I think as I was leaving, she was calling the police. Now, this was like a slow night. I think it was like maybe the fall in Davis. You know, I mean, they're just sitting over at the police station waiting for the phone to ring, and it does, and literally within 3 minutes, there was a red light behind me, and, you know, I pulled over, and this police officer comes up to my car, and the person is a dwarf. You know, this is Davis, California. They have liberal hiring standards, so... You know, I was arrested by a dwarf. I was handcuffed by a dwarf. You know, I mean, he had to reach up, you know, to the handcuffs and like guide me into the back of his cruiser. And you know, it was just humiliating. I never want to be in the back of a police car again. You know, I actually Googled this guy. He was, you know, if you put into a Google browser Davis police dwarf, you will find him in about 3 seconds. So if you guys want to look at a picture of him, because I think he might still be there and he has some renown. Has nothing to do with his arrest of me, by the way. that was one of his minor cases. So in any case, I dried out, I came into recovery, and then I just basically did everything that I was asked to do. I was in another fellowship that did not focus on pornography, and, you know, most of the people in that fellowship were actually looking at pornography. Somebody slipped in that fellowship who had like 14 years of sobriety, but, you know, was looking at pornography and not telling anyone. Pornography has been just a poison in my life, a poison in my soul. It has changed the way my brain is wired, you know, not for the good. I've had such an amazing experience in recovery, and I'm going to wrap up on the positive notes. When I met the woman who I married in 2004, I met her in 1999. At the time, she had an 8-year-old and a 14-year-old, and she and I raised the 8-year-old together. And this kid was not trusting. She was not a trusting kid. It took me, I didn't really fully win her over until after she had moved out of the house. She was in college. She's now married. My wife and I put the wedding on. That was a huge sort of gift of recovery. This kid now sends me text messages all the time telling me about how she's doing in school. She asks my advice on, you know, matters of dealing with relationships and whatnot with her friends and, you know, people she works for. I'm bonded with her, you know, and it was something that would not have been possible without the recovery in this program. It's such a relief not to be constantly thinking about something else. And, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, I'm sure you're constantly thinking about sex and sexual ideas and sexual images and sexually acting out. And it may seem like that's the only reality that you've ever known. And it probably is the only reality you've ever known. It was the only reality I'd ever known for the longest time. And, you know, it's not, I'm not saying it's easy, but it is doable. One can sort of disconnect from this machine. And, gosh, you're up against a lot. The culture completely supports, you know, porn and, you know, sexual craving and, you know, sexual acting out. I mean, it's mainstream. Infidelity is mainstream. Porn is mainstream. You know, hooking up is mainstream. And I'm quite certain that most of the people that are in that life hate that life. I mean, I can't imagine what redeems it. And when I was in that life in a earlier iteration, nothing like I think what's happening today, I was desperate to find something that was real, something that was authentic. And I couldn't because I was like a zombie. I was like, you know, sort of like sleepwalking through my life. And when I woke up and I looked around, I saw that there were people that loved me. I saw that there were people that I could connect to and relate to. I've been able to sponsor young men who are like, you know, I'm sponsoring guys who are younger than some of my children, and, you know, and they're very, you know, there's a friend aspect to it, but it's such an honor to watch people grow up. You know, people who, you know, like I sponsor a kid who's like 31, and, you know, he's married, he's got a couple of kids, and he's got more than a year of abstinence in our program, and he just hit the ground running. You know, he wanted what we have. You know, he stopped looking at porn. He stopped masturbating. You know, his marriage has blossomed. His work life has blossomed. I'm in a very difficult profession. I'm not going to say what it is, but I will say that being able to be present for what's happening around me is tremendously helpful. I mean, I don't want to suggest that a reason to get recovery is because you'll make more money or be better at your business, but I'm making 4 times the amount of money I was, you know, when I first got into recovery, and I do a better job, mainly because I'm awake, and it's really nice to be awake. It's really nice to be able to, like, you know, give and receive love. I mean, that's an AA suggestion or comment that I've heard. I mean, I've never heard it at a meeting, but I've heard privately alcoholics, and I'm an alcoholic as well, say alcohol is a disease that robs you of the ability to give and receive love. And if that's true for alcohol, it's quadruply true for this thing. You know, pornography and sexual craving, addiction, completely robs you of the ability to give and receive love. Even to understand when somebody's trying to connect to you, you don't even get it because you're so disconnected to, you know, everything that's real. Recently, I will say, my wife and I, who spend a lot of time together because we work together and we've had some struggles with conflicts, have had some moments where we just are just laughing, giggling with each other during the day. And I feel like I feel like a high school student, you know, who's like just I just met my first love, not somebody that is my second wife and we have adult children and we've been together for almost 17 years. And it's exciting, and it's fresh, and it's real. She's in recovery as well, and I am absolutely thrilled, you know, to help anybody. So if you're hearing this podcast, you know, call the number you see at the bottom of the screen here. And if you live in Los Angeles, actually either way, and you know, we will try to connect you with somebody. We have something very, very special, and I'm very grateful to be a part of it, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.